Good evening. My name is Gretchen Guess. I'm currently the president of the Anchorage School Board, and thank you for coming this evening to our community forum. As most folks know, this is one of two, and the next one will be the exact same time next week. For those of you who don't know, this is Jim Browder. He's going to introduce himself in a second, but I do want to take a minute and do a couple logistical agenda things, and also tell you what Jim's been doing the last couple days, so you might want to follow up with questions about the last few days. Jim's going to do a short introduction, and then we're going to basically open it up for the floor to the floor for questions. I'll do my best to facilitate as needed, and there's a couple different ways you can ask questions. We have a mic right in back if you want to stand up and kind of line up back there, or if you want to write down your question and hand it to board members. They're going to kind of spread out, but board members, raise your hands, please, so folks know. These folks right here, and I'm going to have them, once Jim starts talking, walk around, and then they'll bring those up, and we'll kind of summarize them. So hopefully that will provide everyone the opportunities that that you need to ask the questions that you have. The last couple days, I think Jim and his lovely wife, Beth, over here, came in Tuesday night from Fort Myers, Florida, and spent Wednesday touring around Anchorage. And then starting yesterday, Jim had an interview with us, then went out to Eagle Charter and to Gruning, to the coffee shop I heard out in Eagle River as well, to Jitters.
Oh, it's great. Great.
Into William Tyson Elementary here in town. Had a press availability, a meeting with principals, meeting with some assembly members, and then out to dinner with a few of us. Woke up, had breakfast with some more board members, went out to South High, then came in and had lunch with senior staff, and then went to East High, and then came in to be able to ask questions of Carol, and then went to on the Dave Stearns show, and then to dinner and to here. So it's been a whirlwind. And then the visit will end tomorrow with a final board interview. So that's kind of the schedule right now, if folks didn't know it. And with that, I am going to hand it over to Jim to do an introduction, and we'll start taking questions. So thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Guest. Please, if you would, just give the board a round of applause, because they've been really yeomans inside of this. Give them a round of applause for putting this together and bringing us together. You know, one of the things that I really did look forward to is having an opportunity to meet with a group inside of the community and maybe answer questions. And I'm going to tell you what I told high school parents at annual open houses. I won't believe everything about you that your children tell me if you don't believe everything that somebody else tells you about me from somewhere else. No matter what you do, you end up in situations in your life where people have critical things to say, and you know, I'm one of those folks. I work in the industry. My name is Jim Browder. I'm honored to be here tonight. I'm from South Charleston, West Virginia, born and raised there. I went to college locally, came to Florida because my parents moved down there, and I lived there for 38 years. I worked through the Lee County school system in a variety of positions. And like, actually, very similar to some of the things that Carol has done here, was pretty much the person that continued working and moving up through our system. I was really honored to be the superintendent there, but I was most honored to be a high school principal there and work directly with parents and students. So one of the things I want you to understand about me going in is I'm a school person, I'm a student person first, and I believe, based on the things that I've seen as I've come in here, that you're really very fortunate. This is a really a good school system. They do things that are right for children. Are there issues that need to be corrected and looked at? Probably so. But I can tell you straight up, I visited elementary schools, middle schools, and high schools in 2 days. And they are just as well run as any I've seen in the United States. And teachers are on task, doing their jobs. Principals are out there. You can tell that the kids know them and care about them. And I'll tell you, I'd just be fortunate to be a part of this community and get the superintendency if that's what the board chooses to do. The board has a tough decision. The other gentleman is a real well-qualified individual also. So it makes the decision tough for them. So tonight, I wanted you to know just something about my background. And I wanted you to know that my experience is about children, and my focus is about children. The gentleman, Dave, on the talk show today asked me that question, and I said, what I'm interested in doing is helping parents and citizens in this community better educate children. And we're way down the road. Y'all are a lot further along than most. I've been all over the country, and you're way down the road in relation to doing the things that are right for children. So, with that, it's not for me to tell you stuff. It's for me to listen to you, let you ask me questions, let me respond to them, and maybe we'll have time for everybody to have an opportunity to say something. I'll look forward to shaking your hand when we're done, and I'll entertain any of those questions.
All right. We have many that came in on paper and not that many on the microphone. So if anyone does want to come forward to the microphone, we're kind of organizing questions.
All right.
You want to, Tam? Go ahead.
Good evening. Tam Agosti-Giesler. I'm the director of the School Business Partnership Program, and I want to give you just a little idea of what we have here and then find out what your experience is as working with the business community. Our partnership program is 21 years old this year. It's a vibrant program. We have over 500 partnerships operating in all the K-12 schools, including the charter schools, and they represent for-profit, non-for-profit, local, state, and federal government agencies, faith-based agencies, a whole myriad representation of our community.
Okay.
Strong support. You may have picked that up in the schools you visited. And I want to know how you can help this program continue to grow and be an integral part of the district and the community. Thank you.
You know, involvement of the community, the business community, parents, everybody in this room is really important to the growth of the district. We had a program very similar to what you described in my former district. Every school had at least 3 or 4 business partners. We had an annual business partner breakfast. There were usually about 1,200 people there. It's a really important aspect in relation to just generating knowledge about the district. One of the things that we as educators do poorly is not brag on ourselves. This system has a lot to be proud of. One of the ways you do that is engage the business community, have them come in and see firsthand what we're doing. It is our responsibility to graduate college and career-ready students. How better to get a sense of what that is by working with the businesses in the community? I would hope that we would continue the real positive relationship we have. I hope that we could expand it and allow anybody in this community that wants to be a part of public education to come and do that.
Great.
Just so you know, as a school principal, I had multiple business partners. As a superintendent of schools, I worked with the Economic Development Group, with what we call the Horizon Council, and worked with all those local businesses that are working to assure the chambers and folks like that, to assure that we're a part of the business community, because we're the largest business in town. We've got to be a part of the business community. So I'll probably answer stuff tonight, and I won't do a great job of it for you, but if you need to follow up, just stop and see me.
Okay. And just a reminder, lots of folks came in the last 5 minutes. There's kind of 2 ways to ask questions. You can line up like this wonderful woman did here, or you can write your question down and get it to a board member. And we're kind of doing collecting them over here. So I'm going to go back and forth between the written questions and the folks in line. So the next one we've grouped together is just a series about unions. What's the best method for maintaining good relationship with the union? What role does the superintendent play in union negotiations? Nearly all the SD employees are represented by the unions. How soon are you going to sit down with union leadership? What has been your experience with unions as a superintendent?
Okay, fair question. Number one, I'm a collaborative individual. We used interspace bargaining inside of my former district. We were one of only seven school districts in the state of Florida out of 67 districts. We're a county system that participated in pay for performance programs. The way we got there is very simple. The state gave us about $8 or $9 million, and the bargaining units and myself were not willing to give that money back to the state, because if you didn't participate, you didn't spread it to the employees in the system. So we real consciously developed programs so that we could spread those dollars to the employees in the system. I'm really proud of the relationship that I had with the bargaining units. We had two of them, teachers and support. I'm also proud of the fact that in my packet of information, two of the references that I give there are the two executive directors of those unions and letters of support from them. I was the 17th member of the Teachers Association in Lee County in 1973. I've always been a member of the bargaining units when I was able to do that, and I believe that bargaining units and the district have to work together to assure that employees are protected, taken care of, and given an opportunity to have a voice. Now, I met monthly with both the units in talking to Carol today. She described what there's eight unions here, and Carol met with the eight leaders in each of those groups, I believe, once a month. I would certainly hope to do that. Talked about it. She described, you know, it's funny, she talked to me about how she managed that and what you all did, and it's exactly how we went about it. I think come in, you have a discussion, talk about issues, talk about things that you're interested in seeing progress, talk about, you know, frustrations that you have, talk about positive things. The relationship with the bargaining unit from my side will not change. I would hope that it would be a positive opportunity for us to provide employees with as much as we can inside of the resources that we have. I have said this out loud, not just here. We are our own worst enemy because we don't vote at 100% of the educators in any system that I've ever been around. What that does is negatively affects the opportunity of us as a group to have an impact on national, state, and local politics. I think that's central. And I think working together and assuring that we're doing the things we can to benefit children. If it's not about benefiting children, you won't see me engaged in it much. Okay? Any other questions inside of that?
No. Okay. I think that's great. And I think this woman was next.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you so much.
Hi, I'm Lucy.
Hi, Liz.
Welcome to Alaska.
Thank you.
As an Alaska Native elder within the community, I have two questions I'd like to ask and that I'm really concerned about.
Yes, ma'am.
One is, what are your plans to increase the graduation rate and dropout rate for Alaska Native students? The second one is, how are you going to address the needs of Alaska Native, Pacific Islanders, and blacks in regards to low test scores?
You know, it's one of those questions that comes to us no matter where we are. What are you going to do to help those youngsters that need help in regard to achievement? Number one, I think your graduation rate has improved over the last several years, but it's still not where any of us want it. If one student doesn't graduate that's in our program, that's one too many in my mind. Will we ever be at 100%? I doubt it. But I can tell you, we should have the programs, accelerated programs, to allow youngsters to make up credit and get on track to graduate. The dropout rate, what you have to do is not only is it a responsibility of the district, But it's a responsibility, Lucy, of you as an elder in your community and a parent or a grandparent. And it's all our responsibility to encourage kids to come to school. It's not a one-way street. One of the things that attracted me to this job, and I'll bet that's a question. One of the things that attracted me to the job as I read about the district is that the community works hard to help the system help children. So we'll work together. We'll assure that we're doing the things to improve graduation, accelerated programs, make-up opportunities, summer school. The board has provided summer school in the past and continues to. Any of those things we can do to assure that kids graduate and don't drop out. One of the things I'm most proud of, when I took the job in Lee, we had a 7% dropout rate. It's 1.3% now, lowest in the history of the district, and lowest of all the large districts in the state of Florida. There are 9 of them. We were the 9th largest, and we had the best dropout rate and the highest graduation rate. Now, it's about having programs and opportunities for children. I met with a group of high schoolers today, and it was one of the issues that they talked to me about. What are you going to do for dropouts and graduation rate, and what are you going to do to improve student achievement? I met with some of the senior staff today, and I see some of them are here. And in talking to the board, I've been real clear. I was asked this question today on the talk show. Jim, where are you on the core curriculum, core standards? Where are you on what we're going to do there? Well, let me answer it like this. I'm a state's right person. I believe education falls to the state. I believe that the core curriculum gives us at least a start point. But if the state of Alaska, which is one of 5 that hasn't adopted and says it's not, we're going to develop our own, I hope that they're rigorous and relevant and that they help children graduate from high school with that allows them to be college and career ready. What am I going to do to improve student achievement? I'm going to continue to align the curriculum in this system. It's another thing that attracted me is the alignment that has already begun. I want us to align to the standards. Make sure that if you're a second grader, when you leave there, you have the prerequisite skills necessary to be a third grader. When you take Algebra 1, I want you to, when you exit, have the ability to match up in Algebra 1 with anyone in the country. The way you do that is align to standards, and we can develop them. We can use something else. Just from my side, give them to me. Jerry, is that you? Hi, Jerry.
Hi.
She's a Fort Myers person. So I want to make sure that what we're doing does the things necessary, Lucy, to assure that youngsters are graduating, reducing the majority-minority gap, and assuring that our youngsters have the skill set to be successful. It goes back to the business question. We're a member of the community. Business, from a business standpoint, they want us to have youngsters that are ready to go to work or go to college. We should do that.
Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take a question from here, a couple that we put together about arts and theater and dance. Both, did you have to cut that? I know you had to make, I think, about $90 million in cuts at your district. Did you have to cut arts and music, and do you feel that music and the arts are an important part of public education?
The hardest decision I made in my career as a superintendent was we reduced some elementary programs in art and music. We didn't eliminate them. We reduced them for a 2-year period and brought them back. Fortunately, before I left, we were able to reinstate those. I was a high school at a center for the arts. I love to watch children perform. It is central to what we should be teaching kids. You know, people talk about STEM, science, technology, engineering, and math. Everybody's talking about STEM and how important that is. I talk about STEAM. You add the arts in there. Arts, activities, those are things that hook a lot of kids and have them stay. It's about providing a well-rounded education. For some odd reason, We all know the reason. We got test crazy in the United States. We left that liberal arts positive education that, as I look around this audience, many of us had the opportunity to participate in, and we've gone test crazy. Well, you can't sacrifice. This district has made a commitment to it. I saw at the two high schools I was at today, I saw as good arts programs as I've seen. As I said, I was a principal in a center for the arts. And I think we were pretty good. So, my commitment to arts is there, and activities in general. I believe it's important for all children.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
Welcome to Anchorage, Mr. Browder. My name is Tony Arant. I am career guide at Greening Middle School. Thank you for visiting our school yesterday. A few years ago, I had a teaching position in the Eugene, Oregon 4J School District. And Eugene has had, for many years, an instituted policy of open enrollment and school choice. It has led to an exodus of more affluent families from certain neighborhood schools and an increasing inequality in the public school system. Sorry for that setup.
Yeah. I know
what. Yeah, what are your views on school choice?
Well, to be quite frank with you, we expanded the school choice program in the Lee County school system. We were under federal court order for over 40 years. When I took the job, we were trying to get unitary status. That means we didn't have to report to the federal court anymore. So we expanded the school choice options. We went to three zones and triplicated any program that we had in the district. No matter where you lived in the community, you had access to a high-quality comprehensive high school, arts program, IB program. Anything that we had in any school was available to every family in the district. Listen, I've operated under boundary changes in schools, in zones. I don't have a problem with that. If you're not growing at a tremendous rate, everything stays stable. If you're growing a lot, school choice really helps a district because you can move youngsters throughout the district. We were the fastest growing county for 3 years in a row, except for Las Vegas, Clark County in the United States. We were growing by 6,000 students a year. We built 27 schools and 17 additions in a five-year period. If it hadn't been for school choice, we'd have been a mess. So there's some advantages to it. I think there's some school choice options that are here. It's something that, as I work with the board, if I get the opportunity, we'll look at how we assign youngsters, choice in general, and talk to the parents and people in the community. Please understand, as I told Carol today, there's nothing really broke here. And she said, Jim, there's some things that we need to improve on. Absolutely. And my position on school choice and such as that is, I do want parents to have options. But I want to make sure that all parents have equitable and equal options. I don't know that that got you there, but that's kind of where I try to get to.
Okay, thank you.
If you want to talk, kick that around a little bit more, if I'm not understanding exactly what you're wanting me to say, I'll at least try to straighten it up for you.
And one thing, just because those of us know our district so well, in Lee County they do transportation for school choice. So when Jim talks about it, I believe, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but with us, it is open to all parents if you can transport your child, and that's always been an issue in this district.
We had 700 school buses ran every morning. So the downside of school choice, obviously, if you transport, is transportation cost. So who's next?
I think I am with one of these, and it's a little bit of a follow-up to the teacher question, which was exactly how did you distribute $8 to $9 million in, quote, merit pay to teachers, and what criteria were used?
It was developed by the union and the teachers and my HR person that negotiated the contracts. We developed pre- and post-tests in every subject area. We It was based on pay for performance, and you had to have the metrics to show how you did it. So the teachers in the system did it with the bargaining unit presidents and executive directors and my person in HR. And they developed a plan that was reasonable. As I said, from my side, I didn't want to send $8 or $9 million back to the state. You had the metric, you lined it up, drew a line. Everybody that was above it got it. Everybody that wasn't didn't. I mean, it isn't rocket science from our side. It was one of those things where the state of Florida had 4 pay-for-performance plans. The governor of the state was Jeb Bush. Him and his brother were fighting about who was going to have the biggest impact on public education. Remember the other one that was the president? So, you know, what we ended up with in the state of Florida is kind of a tug and pull between the brothers. And we changed the plans multiple times. We went through the process each time. Obviously, a question has to be, was it an equitable way of doing it? I don't know. I don't know that there is one, but I know this. When the state legislature says you must, we rallied to the bell and did our part to make sure that it was reasonable from both sides, and we spread the dollars. I hope that kind of answers it.
Yeah. No. Great. Thank you. Go ahead,
yes,
ma'am. Thank you.
How are you?
Susie Butler-Smith, special education teacher at East High School. I saw you there. I was having an issue in my classroom when I saw you passing down the hallway. I was kind of panicked. I was like, please don't stop in my room. but that was a perfect question to lead into my question because we're not there yet. And our concern right now is tying student assessments into teacher evaluations, which gets you to performance pay at some point in time, I think, or which is the easy way to get teachers to get on board with it. So my question is, we're not there yet. So how do you keep us from going from where we are now to performance pay?
And how do I keep us from doing that?
Is there a plan to kind of make sure, not even make sure, but is there some kind of plan to make sure that when we do come full circle with a plan for how the state is, because like I said, the legislators are the one that determine that, when they come up with a plan as to how that's going to, what it's going to look like, what do we do to try to ensure that we're not trying to pay teachers for student performance, as actually what it is for me?
It should be let me make myself clear here.
Yes.
It should be a part of a performance management system. In my mind, it can never be the whole thing. It has to be fair, equitable, and it also is negotiated. It is also something that we work collaboratively on. You notice I said clearly that the teachers helped us come up with that plan. They developed the test. We did it in evenings and on weekends and paid folks to do it. And I think our tests were pretty reliable and valid because the teachers in the system did it. And they did it themselves. Those second grade teachers, you pick 15 or 20 of them and you get them in a room and say, okay, in reading and math and writing, what are we looking for that a second grader should know when they come out? Or what should we know in algebra when the youngster comes out? And how do we align that to assure we're teaching those things through the year so everybody has the same shot? I don't know that we're going to get to a pay-for-performance plan anywhere in America that's based just solely on one criteria. I couldn't support it. We introduced my wife. She's a nationally board certified teacher, and she's one of those folks that a couple of times, I think, received the money inside of that. And it had to be fair, I'd have to listen to it at home. You know, let's be real honest. I have another portion of my life, and I like for things to be fair for everybody. And it was real confusing. The first year, second year was a lot better. But you have to have a plan. You cannot base teacher evaluation, principal evaluation, superintendent evaluation, support evaluation on one thing. You can't do it. It's not realistic.
we're going to do questions, and we'll get to everyone. But I just want to kind of go in order. I'm going to ask a question off the paper, and then we'll go to the next question. As a lot of people in Alaska approach retirement age, they spend their winters somewhere warmer, such as Florida, or closer to family. What are you and your wife's impressions of Alaska winter and the reality of how long it takes to travel across country?
It's 9 hours, 3 stops to get here. It's about 12 hours. Yeah, I think if you fly to Minnesota and here, it takes a little time off. Listen, I lived somewhere else before I went to Florida. It is nice in the winter. But it's interesting. 35 degrees and the wind blowing in Fort Myers is just as cold as it is outside tonight here. I can tell you that right now. I was scared to death about coming for that reason. And I think that's why the board did this now, because if they're looking at somebody from out of Alaska, they want them to get the full breadth of what's here. It's kind of chilly out there, but I'll tell you what, it isn't nearly as bad as I thought it would be. And it does remind me of those days when I was younger and lived in West Virginia and dealt with that cold going to school during the day and coming home. It is an adjustment not to see the daylight until 10 o'clock. But I'll tell you what, it is spectacular here. The sunsets in Florida are great. They're just as good here. My family's grown. I made a conscious decision to apply here. I didn't have to apply here. I could have said absolutely not. I matched what I believe my skill sets are up with what a district was looking for. And I thought I matched well. To get to this part, I'm really pleased to. No matter what happens, I'm excited about being a part of where we are today. So, it is cold, but it's relative. When you get older, you can deal with about anything.
And it was on purpose. next question.
Hi, I'm Kaya Cade. Welcome to Alaska.
Thank you, ma'am.
And I failed public speaking. So my question has to do with what we term up here gifted in the Ignite program. Mm-hmm. So I think I'll just ask you to talk about your thoughts about that and then see if I have a question after you've talked about your thoughts for it, because I do have another part to it. So.
Okay. Gifted education is a part of what many of us talk, you can go a variety of ways. You can do part-time gifted, you can do full-time gifted, you can do gifted immersion. There are a variety of ways to do it. I believe there's a couple of centers locally inside the district that have gifted specific programs. I believe in acceleration. I believe in challenging youngsters, no matter what grade, no matter what program they're in. I want, if you're in this program, I want you to be challenged as much as we can. I want to assure that we don't have a youngster sitting in a third grade class that's doing fifth grade work and we're not paying attention to that. I've already seen some positive examples of that yesterday as we went around and looked in schools. The bottom line is, I'm a big proponent of gifted education. I'm a big proponent of encouraging youngsters to stretch themselves as much as possible, AP, IB, Cambridge, whatever the program, AVID, whatever the program, I believe that we implement things to help youngsters be successful. The fact that in the two high schools I was in today, I think they had 18 AP offerings, that's huge. I mean, that's very, very important. But at the same time, you have to have an ability, even when they're in those AP classes, to take those gifted youngsters and work with them and assure that they're getting the things they need to be successful. So I'm a proponent of educating all children. I provide rigor and relevance no matter what level or no matter where you're going inside of the public schools. Okay? You want to follow? Okay.
What are your thoughts on 2E issues?
Say that again?
What are your thoughts on 2E issues? Gifted and ADD or ADHD or dysgraphia or any of those?
Well, youngsters that have learning needs, we need to be able to address those. We need to work with the parents. We need to design specific programs, have opportunities for those youngsters to have more time taking tests, have tests given to them. We need to accommodate their learning needs. There are a variety of programs that are out there that are new based on more up-to-date research that would give those youngsters an ability to engage in academic exercises and behavioral exercises that help them adjust and be real successful. It's whether it's a BIP, whether it's positive behavior support, whether it's any of those programs, you have to assure that teachers are trained, you have to include them, and you have to work with them and their parents and the support they need to be successful. I hope that gets you there.
And can you combine it with the gifted stuff?
I don't see why you wouldn't. Just because you're gifted doesn't mean you wouldn't get support otherwise. Yes, ma'am. I can say yes, ma'am.
Okay, I'm gonna summarize this one, but generally about bullying, whether it's race, sexual orientation, et cetera, that are taking place around the nation. And what ideas do you have for assuring that all students feel safe in school?
Besides educating, our number one charge is to protect children. We have to provide a safe and orderly environment for children. I'm pretty much no nonsense. If you ask somebody that I had in high school, they'll tell you I was pretty much no nonsense. I'm straight at it. I expected that youngsters behave. But at the same time, I worked with their families to assure that if they weren't behaving, they had to deal with their mother, father, guardian, grandparent, whoever it was. Okay? Bullying is one of those national phenomenons today. It's something that we finally recognized and said, this foolishness has to stop. But for me, that kid that kept flipping me on the ear today writes and sends it to everybody in America that I'm a weasel or I'm a bad person. The technology today makes bullying real easy because it can be anonymous and it can be very hurtful. So you have to take it serious. I know this district has taken it serious. We had a board policy in my former district. The Jeffrey Johnson bullying bill in the state of Florida is in regard to a young man that was in the Lee County school system that committed suicide because he's bullied. Ladies and gentlemen, you have to take hard stances. You have to take hard stances with parents sometimes that don't want to acknowledge that their kid has done something inappropriate. I don't have a problem looking you in the face and saying, that's not acceptable. The one thing I am is honest. And I can tell you up front, I don't mess around when it comes to student safety and behavior. I'm pretty much no nonsense. Fair, firm, without favor. There's a young man that lives here in Anchorage. I'm going to tell you a story. Called me on the phone the other morning and said, Coach, Jimmy Brower. If you don't pay attention, you think it's me. Jimmy Brower. Anybody know Jimmy Brower in this room? He's an Eagle River. He called me Coach. That tells me that he's known me for over 30 years. He said, Coach, you know, I live in Anchorage. A contractor there. Jimmy, come and get me. Show me around. Well, Coach, I'm in Fort Myers. My dad fell and broke his hip. He said, but I want to call and talk to you and tell you that I hope that you're with us. Whether I get the job or not, that made it all worth it. That Jimmy, who I was on like a dog on a bone, wants me to be around him. Yes, sir.
Jim, my name's Jonathan Rush. I'm a physical education teacher at the elementary level.
Yes.
And thanks for coming up.
Thanks.
You touched a little bit on the arts earlier, so my question kind of piggybacks on that. One of my concerns is that across the country, physical education programs are being cut, and this is at a time when obesity and diabetes rates and so on are at an all-time high with our youth. Or beyond being cut, a lot of times the responsibility is pushed onto the classroom teacher who has not necessarily taken the physical education practice or have a PE degree. You touched on the education of a whole child earlier with your previous answer. I was wondering if you could address some of the physical education, your thoughts on physical education, along with maybe some examples from Florida that you've dealt with here in the past.
Thank Unfortunately, you. What John just described is exactly some of the issue we're dealing with inside of physical education. I was a PE social studies major, so I get that part of it, although I've gained a little weight. If I get the job and come back in 30 or more days, I'm going to lose 20, so y'all might not know me when I get back.
You can ski many, many months here in the winter.
That'll be good. So we've done a little bit of everything you described. The classroom teacher in elementary taking more responsibility. With accountability goes the need and the desire of those math, language arts, writing teachers to have more time with the youngster. Consequently, what occurs is the arts sometimes suffer, the specials especially in an elementary school. I can tell you that there's some unbelievable physical education programs inside of my former district at the elementary level. I mean, I was just amazed at some of the things that teachers are doing and how they involve kids and, tap dancing and ropes and just all kind of really neat things that I would have never thought of and people that are talented think of. The reality is, I believe in activity. If we have to reduce in this district, I look away from the classroom first. And it's my hope that one of the things that as I look, I was kind of hoping that I would come to a community where the tax base was a little more stable, where the dollars that were flowing to the district were a little more stable. Well, your district is suffering some too, but not necessarily at the rate we were. I cut $90 million in 2 years out of a budget. And we didn't reduce teachers. We reduced everybody else. I hate to tell you that out loud, but it was the hardest work I've ever done. It's real hurtful. But physical education, I believe in it. I believe that it's one of the things that a lot of people don't recognize that help youngsters succeed and do better work as a result of that physical activity. So I totally support PE, and I totally support your desire to make sure that whoever this is in the job supports physical education and activity for children. Thank you.
Okay, next question is about parent involvement. How do you encourage parent involvement in daily activities of their child or student, especially in lower income and single parent households? And could you expand on the parent involvement department you refer to in your application packet?
Okay. One of the issues that we recognized a number of years ago is that low-income families sometimes don't have the ability because of working multiple jobs and not being available for early morning conferences, midday conferences, evening conferences because of work schedules. We felt that it was important to develop a parent involvement center where we reached out, where we would do the things we had to, provide Saturday activities where parents come in. Trade off a duty day for a Saturday so that parents have access to teachers. Just provide opportunities. You know, parent involvement is also that two-way street. Y'all are involved in your children's education. You wouldn't be here if you weren't. But I can tell you, there are some parents that aren't here tonight that want to be worse than anything in the world. What we have to do as a district is assure that we're tapping every media opportunity, every email. You know, it's different today. You can usually get somebody by email where you couldn't get them before. Because when the phone rang, they weren't there. They might answer that email at 11:30, 12 o'clock at night. So reaching out in multiple ways is real important. The parent involvement center that we created as I left, the year that I left, we were in the throes of developing that. It is now up and functional and really active, and especially active in those communities. We have a huge migrant population. It's in and out. We do a variety of after-school programs. We do anything to engage the students and the parents. Taking a bus, bringing a bus to a center, asking parents to come, taking the parents to the school because of the distance. You know, like Anchorage, we're a large geographic area, okay? So parent involvement is key. But for those parents that can't be involved, this is the good news. Outstanding teachers and administrators take those children as their own and work with them to assure that we're doing our part to provide them a quality experience. Parent involvement is central. It is not required the way it used to be. You have to come to school to be involved. It's not true. You can be involved in a variety of other ways today that you couldn't before. The electronic age allows different ways of doing that today.
Thank you.
Yeah, hi, Jim. Sorenworth, I'm a teacher here and AEA member in Anchorage. And you say you cut $90 million out of the budget in your last school district. In Anchorage, 90% of our budget goes to pay for teachers. When we want to cut money from our budget, it usually means teachers or teacher salaries. I'm wondering how you did that without cutting teachers and or teacher salaries. Where did the money come out of?
It was called the class size amendment. It's a requirement of law in Florida, and you couldn't take instructional folks to balance. You couldn't increase a class size to balance. What we took it from is through attrition, through reducing things and stuff. Went to the county office first, looked at where we could move folks that are paid out of operations to federal funds. Look where we could do anything like that. We worked on the schedule in the secondary schools and picked up another instructional period and could save some money by doing that. You know, it's about being creative. It's about involving everybody. And incidentally, the bargaining unit was involved in the discussion around reductions. We asked the people in the district, tell us what you think we need to look at. Now, there were some that said, cut the superintendent. I understood that. You know, there's some that say, cut every principal. I understand that. There's people that say, cut everybody but me. What you have to do is be thoughtful. You have to be real careful because I always started away from the classroom. Anything that's support outside of that is suspect. We reduced guidance counselors. We reduced security. We reduced some people. But the good news is we did things and tried to do it through attrition. I'm happy to report that not a lot of folks lost their job in those $90 million worth of cuts. I'm not proud of those cuts. But if you don't talk about them today, people don't know you have any experience in dealing with that. It is hard work, and it isn't a lot of fun.
Generally, talking to some of my colleagues, Florida is a state where a lot of schools is one of the biggest states for vouchers, for charter schools, for increased privatization. It's where virtual education, which is computer programs taking the place of teachers, all this stuff is moving into Florida, and you're coming to a district where we have not a lot of this stuff going on. We're a rather moderate district. Our superintendent works really well with both teachers, administrators, and our union. And so, you know, now you're in Alaska. Are you, as we might say in Alaska, are you going to be a maverick or are you going to go rogue, you know, from your state?
There for a reason.
Okay, well, you might be familiar with some of those terms.
Yes, yes.
All right.
Let me say this. Please understand, we did have vouchers. was a legislative mandate. We did have charter schools where the district had virtually no control over them. If the district turned it down, the state automatically approved it. It is not a good situation. I had 20-some charter schools in my district. We're a large district. Dade County had, Broward County, I mean, had about 80, something like that. 10% of my population was in charter schools. So I had to deal with them. When we were growing at 6,000 students a year, they were really good for us because I couldn't build schools quick enough to have seats for children. So they helped us in the beginning. And I used to say, charter schools are my friend. It was probably one of those things I wish somebody would have slapped me for. Because in the end, they were taking children out of seats in public schools, which was hurting us. So I'm not a voucher person. Depends on where you land on that issue. This is a great school system. There's not a lot of reason not to put your kid in this school system. So, you know, it's about need. It's about cause and effect with a governor and a legislature that wants to do those things. I'm a lot of things. I don't know that I'm a maverick, but I don't see coming here and changing the face of what we're doing. I see coming here and being a part of improving on a really good district that has gotten to national prominence. I mean, this is a peach. I mean, it really makes all of us look good to be a part of this system. So consequently, I think for me, I match up well.
Have you spoken with our union representatives?
I met Jim. Are you here? I met Jim coming in. I have not met with any of the others. I hope to. And look, I would encourage the union reps in this room to call the union reps in Lee County. 275-TALC, area code 239. 275-TALC, T-A-L-C. Call them. You know, I know the number. I've called and begged for forgiveness a number of times, Jim. I'll probably be doing that with you, too. And incidentally, I do believe Carol did a remarkable job of working with all. And that's her legacy. I hope I can measure up if I'm given the opportunity with you.
Okay, the next question you've had many times in the last couple days, so since we're almost halfway through, I'll ask it now, which is the issues around the college in Florida that folks didn't like you much. One of your first points tonight was to encourage us not to take rumors at face value.
Yep.
And what I really appreciate is this question really summarized it. In reviewing the information about you on the Internet, it appears that you have been had challenges in working with some unions and some organizations. Would you provide your side of the story?
Absolutely. I've never had an issue with the union. I worked six or so months let me tell you the story. So, board changes, I decide to spread and leave. I apply in Las Vegas. I'm in the top three. They put me in the top three. The next day, the president at Edison State College calls and says, I'm really having some difficulty administratively. I need some help. Would you be interested in coming? I'd worked there 11 years before as dean of instruction for workforce programs. So, we talked about it. I decided, well, let's do that for a while. He appoints me without an interview. He can do that according to the law. And I go and I take the job. I'm the number three person. The day before I go, the number two person leaves. Okay? So now I'm number two. I haven't even showed up. So I go, I assume the responsibility of two or three people. He bumps my salary in February. I went October 1st. Everything's going great. You ask questions. Why is this happening? What are we doing here? I never made a decision, but I did ask questions. And there was some controversy over the president's salary. President's salary, come to find out, I didn't know when I went in, was $850,000. So, the full-time faculty at Edison State College took a vote of no confidence on him and me because he hired me without including anybody. So they, for those of you that don't know, colleges, college professors sometimes do that. They take votes of no confidence. There's a college president in the middle of state, has a vote of no confidence every year for the last 10 years. He's still the president. Okay? They do have a bargaining unit. I worked with the people inside of that. Never had a cross word. So, where do we end up? We end up with that group not really supporting where we are. So, as it started, I went to the president and I said, look, if this is about me, I'm going to leave. I'm going to go back to K-12. They resented the fact as a K-12 person, and there was no interview. So, I left. I've been looking for a job. I'm unemployed. Okay? So, I've been looking for a job. In the last 6 months since I left, it didn't slow down. If you look at what they've written about him in the last 6 months, it's 10 times worse than what they wrote about me. You notice I'm not quoted anywhere in there. I will not badmouth Edison State College. There are great professors there. My wife is an adjunct there. They didn't like me. What can I tell you? Sometimes people don't like how you go about business. I'm not abrasive. I'm pretty direct. And I believe in doing my part to assure that things are right. There were no grievances filed. There's nothing. They just didn't like how it went. What I didn't understand going in is they were really after the president. So my application, his number's there. Call him and ask him. Call anybody in Lee County. Call any principal in the Lee County school system. I invite you to do it. Ask them. Call the director of budget. Call the assistant for HR. Call the union folks. They might tell you a lot of things, but I don't think they'll ever tell you that I didn't work well, folks. But I want you to know this. I did my job. There were times I had to make hard decisions and do things from a personnel standpoint people never forgive you for. So, yeah, I'll do my job.
Hey, my name is Jake.
Hey, Jake.
Jake, will you do me a favor only for Channel 14 to make sure you talk into the mic? I get in trouble with David, who's filming back.
Hey.
All right.
My name is Jake.
Hey, Jake, what's up?
So, with all due respect, I don't feel that I got an answer for the merit pay question that was before. I just wanted, like, the idea of merit pay, thumbs up, thumbs down for teachers.
Who,
really
me?
Quick. Yeah, you. What's your opinion of merit pay for teachers? Thumbs up or thumbs down?
Thumbs up if the state funds it properly. Thumbs down if they don't.
All right.
We don't have the money to do it. I'm speaking anywhere in America, not just Alaska. I don't think any place in America has the money to do it right today. And I'm not really interested in destroying a system because someone says you should do pay for performance. I'm not willing to do that. I believe that if this state or any other wants to put money in to allow us from where we are today, what we make today, to add value based on growth and things like that, I'm good. Bring us the money and let us develop the plan. Don't tell me how to do it. Let the bargaining units and myself and the folks inside the district negotiate a plan that's fair and equitable for all employees.
I hear what you mean. Okay. I mean, I'm paying for a master's right now, and I didn't want student loans, so I'm a 29-year-old living in my parents' basement. I hear what you mean.
I live in the basement too, Jake, just incidentally, when I went to school.
Yeah, all right. So, again, with the choosing, I'm big in choices.
Okay.
So if you had to choose one, you can't choose both or mix them together, would you say that the end goal of a school district should be to create employment-ready, responsible people, or would you say that you should have people that are ready for democratic citizenship? One or the other.
Ooh, that's a hard one as a social studies teacher. I want students to be college and career ready because I believe in education they'll learn the democratic values that we want them to have.
That would be good. In Alaska, we're one of the few states that people can come out of high school and make $90,000 on the North Slope without ever going to a school again in their life. So when they leave 12th grade, they have to be ready with either employment skills or citizenship skills, perhaps not both. So it's really, like in the K-12 day, we don't have the ability to address both all the time.
See,
so
what I'm saying, though, is exactly what I'm saying, career ready. You're saying employability skills. Career ready has that. Okay?
All right.
Semantics, it's words. Jake, thanks.
Okay, one from the side. ASD has a rich history with social emotional learning. What SEL programs are you familiar with, and how will you continue? And how will you support continued growth in SEL as a district?
You know, as I started reading about Anchorage, I'd read about the SEL program. That's another one of those things that I said, wow, this is a very progressive community that's interested in the whole child. Now, all of us have programs. We have programs in elementary, middle, and high schools where youngsters can do a variety of things to get that kind of support inside the school. In terms of a program specifically like that, I never had one. I had a teachers as advisor program. I had a variety of things inside the school that were set up to help youngsters that were in crisis or needed assistance. But I never had a SEL type program. We talked about separate components of SEL as we went through the process, but I never had one exactly like it. One of the things that Carol and I talked about today is her commitment to that. And one of the things that I said back to her is that I see that as one of those programs that sets us apart nationally. Consequently, I think it's an excellent program, and in my mind, I'd be not real smart not to support it.
Star, and just for folks' knowledge, Anchorage is one of three programs, along with Cleveland and Austin, which were really the first districts in the nation to do social-emotional learning. Star.
Hi, I'm Star Marcette.
Hey,
welcome
Star.
To Alaska.
Thank you.
I have two questions. I apologize, but I think they're both equally important. The first one is, I know that here in the Anchorage School District, we are looking and in the process of creating those rigorous academic standards and raising our academic standards. My concern is with our subgroups within our school district. Right now, we have a huge achievement gap between Caucasians, I'm just going to say it, and our subgroups, whether that be English language learners, others, or our special education department. How do you think raising those standards, which I do support, how are we going to be able to keep up in our other subgroups and still be able to narrow that gap?
That's a really good question. And I believe the way you do that is as you align those standards, how I describe it is you narrow the variance. It's a best practice continuous improvement model where we, the teachers and staff inside of this district, take the standards that we're given, assure that they're relevant and rigorous, and we align them. And it is not a process that allows you to align them and tomorrow the light comes on and everybody's highly achieving at a higher level. It's a process to assure that what we're teaching is in line right through graduation. Now, inside of the Greater City Schools report, there was a concern, and it said it, I believe, like this. that nobody, that it did not appear that people in the system saw the gap as something we needed to attack immediately. I can tell you that one of the things that I'm most proud of inside of the alignment process that we went through in my former district is that over the 7 years we saw continuous improvement academically each year. But more importantly, we saw the gap narrow. In a district with 27 or 28% mobility, and incidentally, we had 40%, when youngsters go from this school to this school, if the sequence of learning isn't reasonable and close, you lose youngsters. Now, it's aligning. It's a process of best practice. It's a process of assessment, formative assessment, so we know where kids are. Quarterly assessment, so we know where kids... This is going to be a huge undertaking to complete. You already started it, as you said. You're down the road. I started from scratch 8 years ago. But we continued to make progress because the teachers in the system were committed to it. 5,500 of them. And I believe the way we attack the gap is to align our instruction so that we are new teachers to the system. We hired 800 a year. Now, can you imagine the second grade teacher that's never taught, and they come into a Title I school, and they don't have a clue what happens next? Their College of Education did a great job of providing them some technology skills, but where's their lesson? Where's that alignment? The science of instruction, if you read the research, is what we must get better at. Because I'm telling you, the art of instruction is here. There are great teachers in this system. But what we have to do is get that alignment K-12 so that we are assured that all children in this system are getting quality, sequenced instruction daily. I believe that with all my heart. If you want to read something that really will make you shake your head and say, you know, that guy might have been right, Results Now. In Florida, that's a weight loss program. You know, the reason I picked the book up, I thought, hey, this is an opportunity for me to lose some weight. So I picked it up and I looked at it. And essentially what it's about, it's by a guy by the name of Mike Smoker. He said that the reason we are living longer is because the doctors in the United States and in the world practice best practice. Educators have been slow to come to it. So the reason we're able to live longer is because they've worked better together as a whole, professional learning community, if you will. Okay? So there's where I get to in closing that gap. I believe in that.
Just one other real quick question. I know as a finalist, you have probably done your homework on Anchorage School District and have probably read everything you could read and look at everything you've looked at. And with the meetings and the talking and everything that you've done recently, I know whenever I go into a new job, I get excited about those things that I see that I think, wow, this is what I'm going to tackle as soon as I get there. So I want to know what you're going to tackle when you get here.
Everybody take a deep breath. What I'm going to do is go slow to go fast. Teacher taught me that. Go slow to go fast. Yes, I've read, the board has been forthcoming with everything. I've read the Greater City School stuff. I've read the six-year curriculum plan. I've read everything that I could get to on the website and the Anchorage Daily News. I've read the blogs about me. So, you know, for some of you that really don't like me, I apologize. I hope you do when you leave. But the deal is this. If I'm fortunate enough to get the job, I'm going to do what you call stop, drop, and roll. How many elementary people in here teach that? Stop, drop, and roll, for goodness sakes. What I'm going to do is take a deep breath, stop, and start listening. And I'm going to survey folks. And I've asked every group, the 7th and 8th graders, why do we have to turn our cell phones when we come in? You know, that's probably the best question of the week. Why do we do that? They turn the world off when they come to school. We've got to figure out how electronics plays in the next 10 years. Because I told them, number one, go home and tell your parents you have the best teachers in the world. Number one, because we need to do a better job of that. Number two, I said, as adults, I want you to remember that you have the ability to change the world with us. They're the next generation of leaders. In 10 years, those kids will be back teaching in the system. This one young man, I hope he comes back. Oh my goodness, he'd be such a great teacher. But what we've got to do is we've got to assure that the programs we're providing give kids options. What I'm going to do is ask questions, survey, collect information, to work with the board, spend time with them so that I get a sense of where they are. And incidentally, in 2 days, this is what I've learned. Y'all got a great school board. You're lucky to have them because all of them have a sense of what's right for children. They're diverse in what they think about things. That's great because that gives you better decisions. So I'm going to ask questions. I'm going to collect information. See you, Jake.
I'll be back.
And what I'm going to do is assure that before I move forward, I have the best thinking of the group. Collective wisdom. So that you know, I'm not smart enough to do this by myself. You can tell by talk by listening to me, for God's sakes, I'm not the smartest person in the room. I can't do this by myself, so I need help from everybody. I need help from the board. I need help from the bargaining units. I need help from teachers, support groups, and the community. I need for Lucy to say, Jim, you're not paying attention to this the way you're supposed to. You need to do a better job of this. I do listen. I am coachable. So I'm going to go slow to go fast. When we're going fast, you'll be telling me, oh my God, we're going fast and it's so good, we're doing a great job.
This one kind of ties in somewhat into it. Carol Cuomo is everywhere in this community, from high school concerts to fundraisers to breakfasts to robotics competitions. How will you make yourself visible in our community?
Well, I'm lucky to have the wife I have because she enjoys me being gone. I can't figure that out. You know, I just, they call me the shadow as a high school principal because I was everywhere. Oh my God, you better not do anything. Browder's liable to show up. Don't invite me unless you want me to be there. If I can't be, I usually try to send somebody. There are some real quality district staff folks that are going to spend more time outside in the community looking at what we're doing. It gives them a better sense of where we are. Carol was everywhere. I'm going to tell you, hardest part of this job is following Carol. Because, Jim, Carol didn't do that. No matter who you are, if you follow a long-time superintendent, it is very difficult because of the stability that that person brought to the system. For those in the room, I hope I can take that stability that Carol created and expand it. I'm the longest-seated superintendent in the history of the Lee County school system at 7.5 years. I served for 15 superintendents in about a 15-year period, 20-year period, something like that. Please understand, talking to Carol today, I said, is there any way I could talk to you on a regular basis? You know, would that be something that you could say that you'd be willing to do so I can get a sense of what I'm not doing or what I need to do? I told staff today, make sure I go where I'm supposed to. There are some things I have to go to. Some things somebody else can go to. You'll find that I'll be around a lot. I don't know that I'll match Carol, but you'll probably get tired of seeing me after a while. I have the same stories, and they're really not that funny.
Good evening. My name is Arthur Sosa.
So I come
to you wearing two hats. One as a parent of a student who's at Government Hill in the Spanish Immersion Program, and then also as a school administrator. I work at Bartlett High School as assistant principal. So the question that I have as a parent is, are you a proponent of language immersion programs, and do you yourself, do you speak another language other than English?
Yeah, I speak another language. It's called West Virginian. No, I do not speak another language. I believe in immersion programs. We brought monolingual youngsters that were just new to the country, that had never been in the United States before, and we put them in an immersion program very similar to what East has. East has there's a couple of programs in our community that allow that to occur. One of the things I understand is the national average is probably about 4 years and a half to take a monolingual youngster coming to our country and have them in a position where they can operate in English. One of the things I'm really proud of is in that program that we implemented, it was less than 3 years that we were getting real positive success. I believe in programs for youngsters. I believe in trying a variety of things. Some parents don't want their youngsters isolated. Some want them spread wherever they go. So it's about providing options for parents in that situation and having culturally sensitive people in the district that understand what it's about. At East today, I'm talking to a group of student council youngsters and another group of youngsters that do some peer counseling kind of things. And actually, I had a very thoughtful question, very similar to that, from one of the youngsters. And I said, let's take you. This group, let's select a country. Doesn't matter. They don't speak English. And let's take you today, and let's put you there, and say, oh yeah, the test is in April, and you have to pass it to get a regular high school diploma. Who in here can do it? I couldn't find the restroom, y'all. So, do I believe in immersion programs? Do I believe in anything we can do to help a youngster be successful? That's where I get to. As a parent, I do what's best for kids, and the rest of it kind of works out. People forgive me for not doing something the way they want me to because I usually err on the side of a youngster. So that's what you get with me.
The second question I had as a school administrator is, what is your experience with RTI, response to instruction, and especially at the high school level?
Well, I think it became law in 2001, something like that. We're about 3 years into implementation. We did some phasing very similar to what you are doing. I'm very familiar with the RTI process. I know that in the beginning, actually I talked to the principal where we visited yesterday about it, and he was doing some work with his staff around RTI. And in our discussion, I said, look, what I found is that on this side of it, there's going to be more paperwork and it's going to frustrate people and they're going to want to throw their hands up in the air because it makes them feel like they're spinning their wheels sometimes. Where I get to, though, inside of it, is in 10 years, it will be institutionalized and we will not be over-identifying youngsters into groups that don't deserve it because they have other things going on that we need to recognize and deal with. So I think RTI is the right thing. It's just frustrating because there's a lot going on with it. So I know there's a lot of work to it, but there will be a time when we'll look at it and say, it's one of those things. And I know as a bargaining unit, you all have had talks around, oh my gosh, look at all the paperwork that's involved here. It's about paperwork. And it's frustrating sometimes. But there's ways to accelerate a youngster that you know needs to be tested. There are a variety of things that can occur, but RTI is a process that benefits youngsters. We have to figure out how to make it work right for us.
All right. Thank you.
Next question from the written questions. It is often a tendency in human nature in large organizations to avoid grappling with controversial and complex change. What questions or issues in K-12 education do you think are most under-addressed in most school districts?
What questions are under-addressed?
Questions or issues.
The issue with me that I think is under-addressed has to do with the attack that public education has suffered in the last 10 years. And we've suffered the attack of we're not doing as well as we should, we're not doing this. It's an attack that that we've dealt with that I think is unjustified. Because I've been here 2 days, and I tell you, I've seen some remarkable programs and things happening. I don't think public education deserves the black eye that we have taken, because we have rose to every challenge. I can tell you for a fact in Florida that when they bumped the FCAT standards up and bumped the difficulty of the test up, a lot of folks in the state of Florida and the nation thought that we wouldn't rise to that occasion. The teachers in Florida, as the teachers in Anchorage have done, have stepped up, rose to the occasion, and educated children and done a really good job of it. So I think it's an issue that we deal with that allows all of us some frustration and lack of trust, to be honest with you. You know, you talk about whether it's merit pay or whether it's pay for performance or whether or not you have metrics to look at how teachers are doing in relation to student achievement. There must be an ulterior motive for that. My ulterior motive is to assure that every youngster that comes out of this system has the best chance to be successful at the college or career level possible. And it's an issue that we dance around some because it's emerged as a public opinion. I struggle with it all the time. I struggle with the fact that I just struggle with the fact that we're blamed for a lot of the world's ills today. We really haven't created the economic uproar that we're in. We've educated youngsters through it all with less money, less pay, and probably not as much thanks as we should get. That's probably the biggest issue on my heart in relation to public education. There's all kind of other things I could, you know, I want plenty of money to operate properly. So that's an issue. Budget's a big issue.
On that note, Mr. Griffin.
Bob Griffin, local curmudgeon, not a member of the school district. But a question for you there, Dr. Broder, that you, during your tenure in Florida, you saw one of the most dramatic increases in student outcomes of any of the states in the United States, especially in the case of ethnic poor and disabled kids. And they went through a variety of reforms in Florida during that time frame. Of those reforms, you know, from the A-plus program to the McKay scholarship programs, which ones do you think had the greatest effect in producing those good student outcomes, and which ones were the least effective?
I think the awareness of accountability and student achievement, I think teachers got kind of agitated. And they said, wait a minute, we're not going to let them talk about us like that. We're going to show them that we can perform. So I think some of what we have seen, not only in Florida, but throughout America, are folks that say, look, we come every day, we do a great job for children and families, and we want to continue that. And I think those programs by and large did exactly what you said. I believe that one of the reasons we were really successful is because as a district, we committed to that alignment. We committed to sequencing. We committed to common assessments, common planning. We committed to professional learning communities. We committed to Kagan and cooperative learning. We went with, you know, Schlichte and who were we? Marzano. You all have worked with Marzano. Marzano is helping develop the pay for performance management system in Florida. Him and a person by the name of Donaldson. The reality is, I really do believe it was about alignment of curriculum, staying with it, not changing it up all the time. We have to bring some rest. Okay, here's what we're going to do. Give it to us. Let the teachers in the system take it and make it work, and it'll be ours, and we'll be really good at it. And I believe that's some of the reasons that we look at research now. It's what Mike Smoker said, results now. Look at the research. Look at what we've done. Look in the common best practice and see how that goes. And that's I believe that's one of the reasons we were successful. And I know the superintendents in the state of Florida, I know all of them were engaged around that. We were frustrated with cut scores not being set right and all those things around testing that we thought were unfair. But the reality is, all of us, to include the teachers in this state and every state, have said, we don't have a problem. We can show you that our kids will learn and do well. And, you know, that's one of the things that I think occurred to make that happen.
Well, thank you, sir, and welcome to Alaska.
Thank you. Honored to be here.
Okay. Next question for the sideline. We're going to try to get to all these and try to pick topics that haven't necessarily been touched on. Just as we get down to the last 35 minutes or so. What types of structures and procedures should be put in place to support and train principals?
Mm-hmm.
I know one of your favorite topics. As they take on multiple responsibilities of financial management, human resources, discipline, building plant management, community outreach, and instructional leadership.
Professional development, in my humble opinion, is one of those areas where we as a profession have not done as good a job as we could or can. And one of the reasons we haven't done well is because we don't have enough days to do that. Now, the question is around administrators, but it applies to everybody in the system. I believe a quality professional development plan is central to growth of student achievement. Look, we can put smart boards in every classroom in this district, but unless we provide the professional development to assure that teachers have the understanding of how to utilize those, or unless you have a really smart kid in your class, you know, we struggle to make those work the right way. I mean, we put smart boards in pretty much every school, every classroom in the district, and about 25% of our folks said, Jim, we don't have all the training we need to do this. We know how to turn it on, we know how to, but I got Johnny that can do it for me. Second, I don't have anybody third period. Can you send me somebody? See, it's about that quality professional development that allows us, listen, if you want to see what we should be doing today in the classroom, go to Toys R Us and go to the 3-year-old section and look at their toys. We're coming here, we're in Seattle, and I didn't see one head looking up. What I saw was this. Somebody had a device and working it. Not just the adults, every child in there, every grandparent in there. Everybody had something and they were working on something. The little girl's question at the middle school was really important. Why can't we? You know what I said to her? I don't know, but I'm going to be able to answer that question, or I'm going to provide you the ability to do that. I think electronically we need to figure out what needs to be in every child's hand. We're going to have to go to electronic textbooks. We're going to have to expand that, because I'm going to tell you, in 10 years there won't be a printed book. You have to buy it off of the internet. You know, you put your credit card in it. I got Beth an iPad for Christmas. She's already spent a bunch of money on downloading books, for goodness sakes. She doesn't talk to me a lot now. Sometimes it's wonderful. It's good sometimes. So what you've got to understand is that the professional development piece of what we've got to do is important. Administrators need to understand those operational areas. They need to understand how to develop the budget. They need to understand how to maximize the effect of the budget for children. And if they can't do that and they don't do that, it really hurts them in the eyes of their staff and in the eyes of the district. I think that the core of principals that are out there are top-notch. I've only had an opportunity to meet a handful in 2 days. If they're an average of the group, as I said before, you're in really good shape. Yes, sir.
Hi, Mr. Berger. Welcome to Alaska. My name is Andy Holloman. I'm a classroom teacher. This is sort of a ground-level question. We're seeing a growing number of assessments, tests, surveys, whatever. As superintendent, is there a maximum number of standardized things that would intrude into the teacher's workday in a given year or a given semester to where you would say no more? And what would that number be?
You know, and I'm the one that just said I'm going to survey people. Okay? Let me tell you, I talked to a high school principal today and I said, tell me the issues that you're struggling with. And he said, I'm struggling with teachers having to pull children out to test them. I'm struggling because we're losing instructional time for children because we're administering assessments. Number one, I'd like to have to be able to do a pre and post test and quarterly exams and pretty much everything, and they'd be formative and they'd be teacher administered. Okay?
And those don't count.
I'm not real hot on all the assessments that you have to do and send somewhere else to be graded and that kind of thing. I think number one, state probably ought to trust us. States in general ought to trust us as professionals to do that and have scores instantaneous. To wait, to have to test 4 or 5 weeks before the school year's over and lose 4 or 5 weeks of instruction before you can dipstick and check and see what the kid knows is a waste of instructional time. We've got to figure out a way to do that. That's one of the things I'm hoping that I might be able to have an impact on in a state that has already said out loud, we're not really as excited about how everybody else has to do this as what we want to do and do it in a way that's right for children. So should you be giving multiple surveys a year? No. Should you be giving assessments that are normed or otherwise sent to you by the state? There's some of that we're going to have to deal with, but I would certainly like to be able to get it into a smaller window so that that's not all we're doing. Your frustration around that is mine, is teachers in Washington, D.C., is the teachers in Arizona. Everybody's struggling with that right now, and we're going to have to do it a better way in order to make it so we don't lose so much instructional time. It's about instructional time with me.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Thanks.
Thanks, Ian. Question about, what is your view about early childhood and preschool within the school district? And do you see pre-K programs as a way to increase student achievement, and would you support further expansion of the current program we have in the district?
If the board had asked me to talk about an innovative thing that I did, I had two that I was going to talk about. One of them was a preschool program that we started inside of the district for four-year-olds originally and expanded it to three-year-olds in a low socioeconomic area. And we longitudinally started to look at their results as they entered kindergarten and compared them to those youngsters that were coming into kindergarten from other places that had that ability. Let me tell you, if we want to make any difference in the overall outcomes of student performance over the long haul, we've got to get them when they're three. The earlier we get them, the better they're going to hit the ground running and they can accelerate. There was the question about gifted and such as that. If you get youngsters early enough and get them ready for kindergarten, they're going to do well as they go through because the reading levels will be better. They won't be in a situation where they're behind. I believe with all my heart in early childhood. Now, we have early childhood programs for certain groups right now. I believe in it for everybody. It's about space. It's about money. State of Florida was going to fund early childhood. It was passed by, it was a constitutional amendment. And the legislators chose to do it by giving you so much money as a parent based on your income to get your kid into a preschool program. It's worthless. If you want to do it, you got to do it. You know, in most states, they only require a half a day of kindergarten. Most of us keep kindergartners all day because it's the right thing to do educationally. We need to get them as young as we can, and it makes a difference in achievement. It makes a difference in how well they do as they go through school. Early childhood is an innovative program that we put in. We track the data, the poorest kids we had in the system, and our data showed us that they were performing above a lot of youngsters that came in from more affluent families. So I was really proud of the program.
Yes, Dr. Bowder, this fifth-generation Floridian welcomes you to Alaska.
Thank you, ma'am.
And I will tell you, in the 42 years I've been up here, one thing that you will find enjoyable if you get to come is that when the sun goes down, you can cross-country ski. It's not like growing up in Florida where you're bumping into things. The snow cover gives you light, so go out at 2 in the morning and go for a ski. I have two questions. You mentioned tracking and training. These are the things. I first traveled out into the rural areas starting in the late 70s.
Mm-hmm.
And we had very few Alaska Native students coming into the big town areas. But it's only been in the last, I think, 15 years that they started requiring cross-cultural training for the teachers going into our rural areas.
Right.
Would you consider that that is something that needs to be given to our teachers? And my mom taught for 31 years, so one more thing for the teachers to have to look to do. But some training for our city teachers that have a high percentage of so-called minority students. Should everybody get some kind of cross-cultural training? And then the other thing has to do with tracking. I had someone say to me that she was frustrated, this was someone in the school system, because of the fact that there wasn't, say a student had a problem, and there wasn't any way that it was tracked beyond the school that they were in. So if they shifted schools, then that student was basically off the grid. And, you know, my children graduated in 81 and 84. They did quite well, excellent schooling. And I'm here because we're at a crucial time.
Yes, we are.
For you to be able to come in, or anyone to come in and replace what we have here now and upgrade it, or however, the changes are important. You mentioned three-year-olds. The thing that frightened me recently was when I heard that our private prisons are projecting their needed beds into the future by the test scores of third graders. Now, if that doesn't put a chill in us in terms of what's important, it's not our sports programs, which I love. It's our educational and acculturation of our children.
You're absolutely right. One of the things that I believe Carol and especially this board has done is taken on an attitude that Anchorage has a responsibility to Alaska and to assure that we are a part of that Alaskan community. Being the largest district in Alaska, we can fight only for it. But I don't think it serves the greater good. And that's what you're talking about, I believe. We have a responsibility to serve the greater good of Alaska. Now, you asked a question about diversity training and such as that. I'm sure that that's been a part of professional development inside the system, but it's something that has to be reoccurring. You can't do it 5 years ago and then not do it again. It has to be one of those reoccurring themes that occur inside of a system. The CEL program and its emphasis on social-emotional learning and working with staff to understand what's going on with students, I think plays clearly into your concern that we understand the cultural diversity and differences in our community and work hard to do it. I can tell you that I would support any training like that for me and everybody, because everybody needs to be sensitive and understand that the cultural things that we deal with are real, and we need to be real supportive in relation to what we do.
Well, when children have a sense of pride in who they are, they will achieve anything.
I agree. Thank you so much for your comments.
Written question, and we've talked about this. We have a lot of a military population, about 14% right now, of our students. Have you been in the military? And if so, please speak to your experience. And if you haven't, talk to having a district with a large military population. How do we ensure that we serve those children?
I have not been in the military. I was one of those youngsters that when I came out of high school, I went into college. And if you recall, you were 2S, I believe. And I was in college, and I finished, and I went into public education. And I was excluded. I was exempt. I think my it changed to something else. I don't remember what it was. But I was not in the military. I understand the value of this system. First of all, I'm an American, and I stand real quick for the flag, and I believe in everybody's rights to do the things that we as citizens are guaranteed. The military provides those opportunities for us to do that. For you to come tonight and ask questions and be a part of a discussion. For us as a system, this board and this system has embraced the military children in our community. I think one of the first or second things that the board talked to me about the other morning was the fact that we had just deployed around 4,000 military folks into Afghanistan. What we've got to do is ensure we do what's right for their children, because they're out there defending us. And that's kind of where I get to inside of things like that. They're making it so we can stand here and say what we got to say. So we have to do our part to protect those children while one, or in some cases, both of those family members are gone. So will I do my part? Absolutely. I look forward to it.
Thank you.
Hi, Jim. Again, my name's Jonathan.
Hey.
Second question here.
What's going on?
Earlier today, you were on the Dave Stearin radio show. And I was able to hear that show, and one of the callers called in and mentioned the fact that the school district student population has hovered around just under 50,000 students for the last few years, yet our budget's, you know, about $850 million. And that's what you're going to hear that a lot from the public, that, oh my goodness, the budget's very, very large and the student population hasn't grown. You're also going to hear things like, oh my goodness, teachers are paid way too much, et cetera, et cetera. How are you going to educate a public, but yet no matter what you say is going to be wrong? How are you going to kind of deal with that situation?
One of the things I'm going to do is I'm going to break that budget down from 850 into some understandable portions. First of all, the operational budget isn't $850 million. Included in that are federal programs, our grants, our food service, our maintenance and are things that aren't, yeah, debt. Who said that? Yeah, debt. So there's some other things inside of that $850 million. And I got to be honest with you. I was guilty of that when I was going through the website and I said, okay, I want to know what the total budget is. But at some point, I looked at the operational part, what the federal part, and I said, no, wait a minute. The real budget in this district is about $600 million, I think. Well, that's a lot of money. But there's 50,000 students, and there's over 6,000 or 7,000 employees, and there are reoccurring things that occur inside of contracts, inside of what we deal with. I would say to those people that are concerned about the budget, I would say, number one, you're getting a lot of quality inside of the youngsters that we're educating. Is it where it should be for this community? No. Is it going to get better? If I'm given the opportunity, yes. Together, we will make it better. But listen, it's the same question I answered in Lee. It's the same question I'd answer anywhere in America right now. The foreclosure capital of the United States, Lee County. Houses that cost $350 now sell for $59. It is remarkable. Three bedroom, two bath, 1,800 square feet pool. There it is. You want somewhere to go in the winter? Have at it. But I'm telling you this. I looked at data that the Greater City Schools did on Anchorage. I think we spend $14,200 a student. That includes everything. That includes construction. That includes everything that we spend on in this district on a kid. That's a steal. Do you know what we spend in Fort Myers, Florida? $8,000. We're 46th in the nation in teacher salaries in Florida. That's embarrassing. This state should be proud of what it's done for education. Should we stop? No. Are there people out there that say that we aren't as frugal or as tightly wrapped at the district office as we should be? Yeah. What will I do? I'm going to give them the information. And I'm going to show them positive student achievement. And I'm going to explain to them what my friend from Florida said. If we don't educate them, we're going to have to build more prisons where we pay $30,000 a year to hold them. So, you going to pay on that side or this side? I'd rather put my money in children and assure that we're doing what we have to for them so that they can take care of us when we get old. Well, some of you all aren't there yet, but I'm old. So that when they take over our country, our state, and our community, we've done our part to make sure they can do it. It's easy to be critical of what we're spending money for. I would say to any of you, if I put you in a school for a day, anywhere in the country, you'd beg me for forgiveness tomorrow. Because it is not easy work, and it's work that's honorable, and what we should be doing for our community and children.
Thank you. We got a handful of questions about libraries. Where do you see libraries?
There's some media specialists here. You got to love them.
Yeah, where are libraries going to be in 10 years? What do you think about certification levels of librarians, support for libraries?
My friend that had the pink All-Star Converse, I thought I saw her earlier. She was here. The media person at the East. Met her today. She showed me a smart board in the back. Some things they're doing in that library. I mean, the participation in her library is phenomenal. You want to have a real experience in the library, go to East High and visit the Media Center. She does a great job. I'm going to tell you, the Media Center that we know, the public library that we know today, in 10 years you won't get it. First of all, there's not a card catalog anymore. It's all online. First of all, next, there's the Dewey Decimal System. Everything's online. So the reality is this. Media centers, like the classroom, will change. I went in a science class today, and every student in there was on an Apple computer. It was a mobile Apple lab. That's a laptop. Every kid's got it up. They're working on it. They're doing an experiment. When we went to school, the Bunsen burner was turned on. You know, we got a chance to try to burn stuff up. Reality is, things have changed. Libraries will be no different in that change process. Books will not be on the shelf like they are today. I predict in 10 years, you'll be hard-pressed to find access to a lot of hard copy books. I don't know they'll ever go away till some of us go away. But it's a different world. Kids are different. And you know what? I'm going to tell everybody in here, I hope your feelings don't get hurt. kids are way smarter than we ever were. Because they have access to information that we didn't have a clue where to go. They speak into the phone. What's the population of Fort Myers, Florida, where this guy's from? There it is. That quick. They don't have to look it up. They got it in their cell phone. They're talking to their girlfriend. Now, wait a minute. I want to find something out about it. Boom, there you go. It'll change dramatically. One of our board members and I were talking at dinner. I don't know we'll recognize public education in 20 years. Virtual, there will be some of that. It's huge in relation to what's occurring. Instructional techniques will be way different.
Thank you.
So,
good evening. My name is Scott Von Gimmigan. Two questions.
Yes, sir.
What would you do to help promote passing of school bonds?
Passing of school bonds, okay. You want me to do that first?
And the other one is explain how you would harness the technology to improve or enhance quality of teaching and optimize operational efficiencies.
Number one, in the passing of anything, you have to have an informational campaign so that the public understands exactly what they're going to be asked to support. The board, I think, at a meeting a month or so ago, approved the next bond issue at $59 million. Okay? There are some school additions and repairs and renovations that will be included in that. I think the public in general needs to understand what those dollars are going to go for and how it benefits children. Okay? And I think we need to do a really good job of getting that information out there. I think the other thing you need to do is you need to trust the judgment of the people that you elect. Now, I can tell you, my experience is they're real hard to convince of some things. They're very sensitive to the public's conversations about the tax base. I've already had the conversation with them. They want us to be, they want to be sure that what we're doing is supportive of educating children and real sensitive to the taxpayers in the community. Now, how you bond and how you build things is different than I'm used to. Because the school board in Florida has the authority to assess that millage. They don't have to ask your permission. In Alaska, we ask permission. It's a part of the process. I support it. I've got to get out there and talk to people and make sure they understand the issue and what we're doing. And the board does that. Teachers do that. Principals do that. As I said early on, we're probably our worst enemy in relation to doing a good PR job around certain things. I think it's about being honest, upfront, transparent with the public. How will I harness technology to improve instruction? Well, by providing teachers those technical things in their classrooms that help them draw kids to instruction. You know, kids today on the large screen TV in the house are playing, are doing things. I've got a 3-year-old grandson that's doing active things on a screen at home with the TV. He's watching, what is it? It's the dinosaur show, you know, it's a bunch of that stuff. You know, he's counting the 10, you know, he's doing all the things that that he needs to do to get ready for the when he comes into school. God forbid he's here, he's somewhere else, thank goodness. But it's about teaching professional development. We talked about it before. It's about professional development to assure that our teachers and the folks that are delivering that instruction from a technical standpoint understand how to do it, and they have the ability and the hardware to do it.
Slightly similar and different question to that. Teachers are the backbone of any educational system. What are your strategies, both historically and currently, that both recruit and retain quality teachers?
The sun sometimes recruits for you. Being in a specific place in Florida doesn't help you. You would think that living in Fort Myers, it was real easy to recruit people to come down there and teach. And in fact, it was not. Okay? The East Coast of Florida provides many more opportunities than the West Coast does. Thank you. So you have to have a program. I met Eric, our HR person today, and he talked for a second about assuring that we're recruiting and retaining the best and brightest. One of the frustrations that we as administrators face is sometimes the game that's played with the budget. The budget, the governor's budget comes out, or we try to balance a budget based on you want to have these reductions, and then in the end, the money shows up. It frustrates the assembly. It frustrates us. It frustrates those teachers on the other end of the scale. They don't know if they got a job. They leave and go somewhere else. But incidentally, this is not unique to us. I dealt with it for the last 4 years as superintendent in Lee. So you have to have a program. You have to have incentives. You have to have a salary that's, welcome back. You have to have a salary that's, that allows our people to have a decent lifestyle, and you have to make sure that you have quality practices in place. Remember that alignment I talked about? I hope it's easier in the mind of a young adult coming into public education to come here and assimilate in than it is somewhere else. That draws people to you.
Go on up.
Hey.
Hello and welcome to Alaska.
Thank you.
My name is Kelly. I'm a proud first-year teacher at the elementary level.
Hey, Kelly.
And this question's kind of been touched on a little bit, but it's important, or I feel it's important, to provide a variety of schools because our students need a variety of options. And in our district, we have a variety of schools, like optional schools, ABC,
right,
alternative teaching philosophies, immersion schools that are similar to voucher schools, but they fall under the public education umbrella,
yeah,
without being privatized or having to be self-supported. So will you continue to support these public school programs financially, even when budget cuts need to be made?
Remember I said you stay as far away from the classroom as possible. I believe in competition. One of the good things about school choice is competition, because schools try to find their niche. This district has done a great job of placing schools, theme-type programs in schools throughout the district. Now, there are people in here that might argue, well, this one should have gone there and that one should have gone there. That's typical. The reality is, I believe in providing options for families and students so they can find programs where they can succeed. I'd certainly hate to be dealing with that and having someone say, gosh, you are just lockstep and doing one thing. There's all kind of learning styles. There's all kind of opportunities that we should provide for families and kids.
Thank you.
Thanks.
I want to get to the couple folks that are standing.
Yes, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Brown. Heard a lot. I think I got a pretty good grasp of your pleasure of teachers, so I'll just throw something out off the cuff here that has nothing to do with teachers and teaching the schools. Just to get an idea of your philosophy, it was talked about earlier about obesity rates in the schools and that kind of thing, and so how that ties in with the nutritional programs that they have in the school district here. What's your philosophy on balancing the needs to have a healthy option with the need to sell food that children will purchase and provide funding for it?
It's one of those cause and effect things. Incidentally, I love fried tater tots. We didn't do them inside of my last district, and we don't do them in this one. It's one of the reasons I look the way I look. I think what we have done and what we've emerged to as a district, a state, and a nation is the realization that the food that we're feeding our children could have a reverse effect on the length of their life. So it's a life-type decision. I think the board president, the vice president, and the whole board has wrapped their arms around healthy choices and taking some of the things that aren't as good for children out of schools, as they should. It's federal law. Okay? I do believe that there's some middle ground maybe, and it's one of the things we've talked about already. What's the middle ground where we could assure that we have healthy choices? We started a vending program in the high schools because we had to take carbonated beverages out of the machines during the school day. We had to do it. And what we did, and we had to take the junk food machines out too. What we did is we started providing bagels and a variety of food, healthy food choices like that. And actually what the school found is they made more money than they did with the junk food. So I think as a community, and actually it's a question that's been asked twice now, you're the third one, in my 2 days in talking to people. Jim, we really want an opportunity to sell stuff and make, you know, times are tough. The way you make ends meet is you sell stuff. I get that. But you have to be willing to do it and do the things that are necessary to protect the board and the superintendent and us as a district from folks saying, wait a minute, you're more interested in making money as opposed to taking care of children. So I think there's some common ground we can get to. All juice in machines, such as that. There's some other things that youngsters enjoy drinking. Water. As a high school principal, I made a lot of money on water machines.
Well, just as an aside, what's your philosophy on open campuses then?
We just talked about that today. I never had an open campus as a high school principal for 18 years. Never had an open campus. I would be a nervous wreck. But I talked to the principals today that are in those schools. The board has had an open dialogue about open campuses. This board is, you know, they hear something. They are spot on in relation to talking about it. If I'm coming as a high school principal, I don't want to open campus. But that's not a fight I want to die in. If it works in this community and the parents in this community are okay with it, Jim can live with it. Okay? But if I'm going to be the high school principal, I'm going to come with the understanding that we can't do that. But I'm not asking to come as a high school principal. I understand there's some past practices that are things that work. As long as kids are coming back to school and they're not getting hurt while they're gone and instruction after lunch is as quality as it is before. You know, we had open campus at Fort Myers High School when I started there in 1973. We didn't get a lot of returners after lunch. And that was a whole different time, as some of y'all remember. Yes.
Carla.
Hi, my name's Carla Hollingsworth. I'm a parent of a soon-to-be kindergartner, as well as a 10-year employee of the district with the Indian Education Program. And as I'm listening tonight and the conversation about technology, and I apologize because I was late, so I may have missed a piece of this, but the question about technology and how important it is and how our kids are so much smarter than we are because their ability to access information, I actually personally question that statement, not you personally, but the statement that makes us smarter. I actually don't know that for sure that we are seeing that makes us smarter, because it also shortens our attention span as we're developing, and those kinds of concerns about what kind of humans are we developing in conjunction with technology. And so my question to you is, it's kind of a philosophical thing, and it's not riding the curve of technology is the greatest. Technology also creates a lot more work, even though it's supposed to make things easier. I speak that as an administrative staff person. So my question is broad, and I want my son to be a whole person, and I have questions about video games and the use of technology as a main tool for developing his brain and his spirit. And I'd like to know where you come, being that you're looking at a whole community that embraces technology. But
That's probably the hardest question I've been asked about technology since I've been standing and fielding questions for the last 20 years. Great question. Way to put that back to me. I appreciate that. I don't want to give the impression that the whole child is not important and that electronics and technology is the only way to teach. I say with tongue in cheek that they're smarter than us because of what they know and what they can allow themselves to be engaged with through parent support in a technology standpoint. I think that one of the things that I'll never think is that technology can replace a human being that will allow that youngster to get a variety of experiences. In our elementary schools, the ones I was in one yesterday, and in the elementary schools in general that I'm used to, technology is a portion of a learning experience. It's like a center. You have a center for this, and you have a center for technology. And I went in a first grade classroom, and there was a young man, a group of young youngsters working on a computer on spelling. And, you know, they understand how to use the mouse, and they're practicing their spelling. They got on headphones, and I can hear them spelling. It's the same thing my grandson does on the dinosaur show. They're teaching him to sing the ABC song and spell and do. It's a part of the learning experience, but my daughter reads to him every day. I would hope that the teacher in that first grade class reads to them every day, has the personal touch. It can't be about one dimension. Education has to be about the whole child.
So the follow-up question for that would be then, as the leader of this district,
yes,
how do you hold a space? How do you hold that?
Teachers.
The whole child. And I don't just mean from my own little perspective.
Yeah.
But
no. What do you mean, how do I hold it? How do I make sure that we do that?
Yes.
I don't have to. Teachers make sure we do that. Teachers take that technology and utilize it how best fits their style. Some will use it more, some will use it less. There are elementary schools that have no computers in the classroom, and they have a computer lab that they go to as a special once a week. The whole child is dealt with. It depends on the style of the teacher. There's probably 25% of the teachers in the district that would rather be beat with a stick than have to deal with technology. You know, it's the reality of what we do. But teachers understand that whole child.
And when you align
The curriculum,
and then with alignment of curriculum comes some standardization sometimes in how things are presented and how things are done. How is that wholeness of a child's experience, including higher level thinking, going to be included in that alignment if you're going to be advocating
it's
that for a broad...
It's part of the philosophical discussion we'll have about alignment. And you said something that I want to comment on, though. The alignment is about the science of instruction. The art of it is the teacher and how they present and how they work with youngsters. It's not about that the alignment tells them how to do that. The best calculus teacher I ever saw as a high school principal gave no tests and no homework. And 100% of his children passed the IB calculus test. How'd he do that? He did it because he knew how to sequence that instruction as a person with those youngsters. So I would submit to you that it's really about teachers and utilizing a variety of tools in order to teach that whole child. I wouldn't want you to think that I think that technology can teach our children. Isn't close.
The teachers end up in the middle. They end up in
right.
The middle.
Right. No, I get that. I get that.
Great. One last question because we're running over. I appreciate everyone staying, but I'll ask the... Unless
Jerry wants to ask a question.
Okay, Jerry, you can ask the question.
I know who Jerry is. She's from Fort Myers. She works at the golf course I play at.
That's right. And many of you, I'm new to Anchorage in the last year, but I really wanted to come tonight because I think sometimes I was considered an outsider when I came here, and that you have different views and ideas, but I want to speak for Jim because I was a teacher in the Lee County school system. I had a daughter who
came up to Lee County School System. I've had the opportunity to work with Jim on many different levels, and I did come into the golf business, and I saw him that way. But the one thing that I want to convey to you, because I think we don't see the personal side, we see this person, and we field these questions. But one thing I will say about Jim, he's fair, he's honest, he always, always had the students at heart. Seen many times underprivileged children where he was sitting with the parents, he was giving them rides home. Those are the things that you don't see in this question and answer. And I think it's really, really important that you know that. I feel it's an honor and a privilege to have worked for Jim, to know him as a friend. And I wish him all the best. I hope he comes to Anchorage. I hope that you do support him. And I wouldn't have missed being here tonight because I wanted to see you. And I'm like that guy that called. I would come hunt you down.
Thanks, Jerry.
Thank you. So last question. Miami Dolphins or Tampa Bay Buccaneers? Who do you root for?
Well, I have to root for Tampa Bay because about four of the players on that team are from Lee County. Ernest Graham, the Buchanan kid, he played tackle there for about 11 years. He played at Mariner High School. One of the things that I was real fortunate to have been a part of through a really, from my side, a positive career, is watching young people play, learn, and act and go. I'm most proud of a young man by the name of Mike that's in New York City right now dancing ballet. He never had danced before he went to the center, and he ends up dancing in New York. I'm really proud of the kid. He used to come back and do teaching for us in the school. I'm really proud of those athletes that went away to major colleges and made really positive names for themselves. I'm most proud of those kids that went through school, that got high school diplomas, that got, when they left, they went right into college or careers, and they're members of the community that I'm proud to know. The most important thing that people call me is coach, or some people get by call me a lot of other things, and I just know they're trying to mess with me. But I want you to understand that I'm here as a person that believes in children. We won't always agree. You can bank on it. But when we don't agree, we'll disagree as ladies and gentlemen, and we'll work together to improve whatever we have to do to make it work. I'm here because I believe in kids, and I think I can add value to the system. I would be honored to follow Carol and try to continue her legacy. And I was honored to be here tonight. I don't think there are any more questions. Thank you for coming. I'll stay and answer questions that you might have that you just want to ask personally. Thanks for being here, and I'll look forward to talking to you at some point.
Thank you, everyone.